Welcome to Get a Better Handle on Life. I'm Barry Winvolt, and this is my podcast.
When I was 10, 11, 12, 13, started hanging around the wrong crowd, started getting involved with things such as crime and drug abuse and partying too much, and I was off track. And I realized that that was not going to end well. I realized I could either continue down this route or I could turn things around.
That's the voice of my guest today, Daniel Hauger, and you'll hear how he did indeed turn his life around, and at the age of 24, only 24, he's built a successful business, having learned from his experiences. So far, so average, you might say. I've heard that story 100 times before. Somebody bad turns himself good and does great stuff in the world, indeed, and Daniel is doing just that, as you will hear. But there's far more. What really fascinates me is how he has systematized, as he puts it, his approach to life, and how he now passes that information on to others. But first, back to his story.
One thing that was certain for me was that if I was actually going to turn things around, I wasn't going to build a mediocre life or a decent life or a tolerable life. If I was actually gonna give life a chance, I was gonna build something truly worth living. I wanted to build a life that, in my own words or my own estimation, would be a world-class life that truly mattered. And that led me to a long journey of just studying a ton of personal growth. And then later on, I started being interested in entrepreneurship and stuff like that as well. But the personal growth aspect has always been the main thing for me.
So you say rather casually that you realized, you know, you're obviously in, yes, it's a common path and one I know something about from not my personal experience, but family experiences. So pretty close at hand. I know how hard it is to break free of that type of lifestyle, because our peer group is very important to us and that's where we belong and it's all the stuff we know about. And so usually I found that outside influences work sometimes, you know, that we'll meet somebody who helped, I don't know, they say the magic thing. A friend of mine when I was young, you know, it was quite a druggy culture. I wasn't involved in it for some reason. It just didn't turn me on. But one friend wound up in psychiatric hospital, and I remember going to see him, and he told me that there was a nurse there, a male nurse, who was particularly influential. And when he came out of hospital, that really was his springboard to changing his life. You said, I needed to turn my life around. Now, there's so much in that phrase. You know, how did this realization happen? I mean, first of all, was it a one-off instant thing, this realization?
Well, that's a great question. I think the beginning of it was kind of a one-off. I was at this vacation home, summer home with my friends. We had rented it for the weekend, and it was all about partying. There was so much trouble that weekend. You know, everyone was on a bunch of. Anyway, I was hanging around those people, and we were doing things we would always do. And then eventually, one of them came up with this fun little game. We're sitting in kind of a circle, where we should kind of guess or estimate when. You know, how long do we think we're going to live? One person would say, oh, I think I'll be 85. And another person would say, oh, I think I can do 92. And then they came to me and I just completely killed the mood, because with a cold face, I said 21. And everyone was like, no, then come on, how old do you think you're going to be? I said, there's no way. There's no way that I will make it past 21. The way I'm living now and the way I've been living for a long time, there's no way. And I think that kind of obviously it scared them, but it also scared me. And not for my own sake, because obviously I wasn't interested in life. I just felt like I can't do that to my mother. I can't do that to my brother. I can't do that to my to the people that matter to me. And so it was for their sake that I actually wanted to turn things around. And then you mentioned kind of third party influences. That's once I had made that decision, I started seeking out this this influence. So I would. For my Christmas wish list, my birthday wish list, I would just wish for personal growth books. I would read online everything I could find for free. I would get some jobs so that I could pay for stuff as well. I would pay for books. I could pay for courses. So then I started really seeking out this outside influence.
You see, what I'm trying to drill down to is the switch, you know, that moment. You're sitting in a circle, you remember it well, it's imprinted on your mind. That was a significant moment for you, a major moment. And then you said it was a weekend, and then Monday or Tuesday came around, and suddenly you're a changed person. But it's never that simple, you know. How do you then turn that idea, significant and impactful though it was, you know, you must have had to separate yourself from influences in your life. You must have had to move away from your friends. You develop different interests. You become a different person. You become engaged in personal growth as your kind of mission in life at that point in time. How did that happen? Can you drill down a bit further? I mean, what happened on Tuesday, you know, or Wednesday?
Yeah, I love that question, because sometimes when I tell my story, people will think it's kind of like in the movies. And then, you know, from that point forward, I just 180'd my life and myself, and everything was perfect, and we lived happily ever after. There was a very long process of trying to turn things around, right? So obviously I had a bit of a drug problem I had to face. I had some circle of influence issues. I needed some better friends, right? Some people that wanted to do something with their lives. I needed to take care of my health. I needed to find some kind of income. So I had a lot of stuff. So it wasn't just like from that day on, life was great. I had, for years, I was building, and I was still going back and forth a little bit, right? So sometimes I'd go back to some of the old patterns and then realize, nope, I gotta do this thing, right? I gotta really. So one thing that really helped me a lot was, first of all, once I decided that I was gonna build a world-class life, the first thing was figuring out what that was. So I spent a lot of resources and time and energy trying to learn about myself and trying to learn about what would a life worth living look like. I think we're all just told, oh, it's money and it's a nice car and it's... But I wanted to really truly paint a very clear picture of what a world-class life would be like for me.
So, I mean, you say it took a long time, but let's get some perspective, some chronology here. How old were you when you had that epiphany, so to speak, sitting in that group?
That would have been the middle 18, so it'd be 16, 17.
Okay, so really quite young by today's standards. Yes. And then now you are?
I am 24.
Okay, so in 8 years, you've done the journey of a lifetime, really. I know it's not over, but really that is a tremendous mountain to climb, because many people never make it even halfway up. So congratulations on that. And then, so what were your actions around that time once you were on this path? You say you slipped back, and I know from personal experience, I was thinking about this morning, about something in my own life where I suddenly radically had to change lifestyle. And I had that moment, and I was quite euphoric about it at the time, because it kind of gave me a direction. And I'm a person of action. I like to be doing something. But then the realization slowly dawned on me, but it's not that easy. Taking the decision is only taking the decision. I had to make changes that were actually, I didn't really want to change very much. It was more comfortable where I was, even though I knew some of these things weren't in my best interest. There were nothing to compare with yous. Mine involved, you know, age, health, those sorts of things. But it was not easy even for that, in that case. But at a younger, more impressionable age, how do you hang on to the direction, the motivation, the rudder in your life to keep on that route?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I'm probably going to butcher this quote, but I read a quote, something along the lines of our environment and our habits, our subconscious control just about everything we do, but we control our environment and our habits and so obviously I had to do a change of environment, I had to change of habits. But to go more practical, what I did was I would identify what kind of values am I going to base my life around, and then I would kind of dive deeper into those values. So let's say I say, well, confidence is a big part of me. If I have confidence, my life is better. Well, what does confidence mean? And then you can dive deeper into, okay, is that looking good? Is that performing socially? Is that doing my best with my work? What are the ingredients of confidence? Same thing with freedom. it's easy to say you want freedom, but what is that? Is that freedom of location? Is it freedom of time? Is it feeling like you have a wide, you can make decisions and you're not stuck into doing the same thing over and over? So what is freedom for you? And so I had to get very clear on all that. And then what I would do is I would kind of identify a bridge the gap activity. So once I know what I want in life, let's say we take one area at a time, we look at my health. If I have a clear picture of what kind of health I want, and I have a clear picture of what kind of health I have, a gap emerges, right? And once we have that gap, we can now identify some activities for closing that gap. And that's very rarely rocket science. If you want to build more muscle, you should do weightlifting. If you want a better cardiovascular system, do some cardio. If you want to get smarter about your personal finances, you should read books about personal finance. Obviously, the things that we need to do to move forward are often very evident. They're often very clear. It's the consistent implementation that is more tricky. So that's what we essentially help with my company, actually. And then once we've identified some of these bridge the gap activities, we will build systems around it. So,
okay. So let's come back to the systems in a minute. Otherwise, I'll lose my train here because there's some stuff I want to capture. You're listening to Get a Better Handle on Life with me, Barry Winbolt. First of all, Daniel, I wish I thought like you when I was 24. You know, I mean, I've had a good life. I've had a great time. But, I'd have been much more directed and purposeful, I think. So congratulations on that. You said, and I find this fascinating, because you said we control our environment. Of course we do. Many people would say they don't, but we have choices. And what you're providing is a glimmer of light for me into a new way of thinking about this, because I considered and do consider and tell people, you know, it starts in here. And of course it does. But a big part of in here is where we are and who we're interacting with. And they do say, don't they, you know, judge a person by the company they keep. But also, on a more personal level, if I'm hanging around with idiots, I'm probably going to act like one. And that's just peer pressure and all that. So we have to be selective. And that gives us control. That's something that is far easier to control, it seems to me, than if I'm a person who is, say, where you were at 17, 18, whatever, it's going to be much easier to hear, work on your environment, work on the company you keep, work on the activities you do, and bear in mind your values, build knowledge and understanding about your value set, but stick to the plan, and you can act that, you can do that. That's something you can get up every day and do. So if your plan involves good health and going to the gym, it's the plan. You just get up and do it. You don't question it. So I really like that idea of external influence in terms of our environment and the choices we make and how we choose that environment or choose to create that environment or put ourselves in a place which is or places that are favorable to our own development.
Absolutely. And I'd like to say when I say environment, I of course I mean the physical environment, I mean the social environment, all of that, but also I think the kind of the emotional environment and the I kind of just maybe I should call it circumstances instead, but sometimes, for example, we all know that if you go to the grocery store when you're hungry, you will purchase more and you'll probably purchase some more sugary food, some more, you know, you'll have worse buying habits if you go to the store hungry. But you decide if you go to the store hungry or on a full stomach. If you're very tired, there's probably a bigger chance that you'll be irritated with your colleagues, all these things. But you, in at least to some degree, can control if you're tired or not. For that important day. And so I think there are many things where we can kind of set up our environment or our circumstances, whether that's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's social, that kind of allows us to perform.
Well, also, you know, there's another element, a slither of something else in there, isn't there? If I go to the store and I'm hungry, And some would say, well, I can't control blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, but you can be aware that you're hungry and that you're more vulnerable to making bad choices. You can be aware that you're tired and maybe postpone that important conversation or that decision until you're not tired. So there's another element sandwiched in there, isn't there? That it's, yes, we can control the environment. We can also control our responses to the environment or our vulnerabilities, et cetera, and how the environment might be influencing us. Or how the circumstances might be.
Absolutely. And you also pointed out one thing about the systems where it's not a decision anymore. It's something that happens. It's something that becomes a natural part of us, a natural part of our routines, and essentially becomes a part of our environment. And that is one thing I'm very, very big on. I would like to make, and some people are surprised by this one, since I've decided to be an entrepreneur, I've decided to take on career paths that require me to take decisions or make decisions. But I actually try to reduce the amount of decisions that I have to make as much as possible. I really prefer as much of my growth, as much of my progress, whether that's in the gym or it's in the boardroom or wherever it is, to be kind of dialed in a more systematic way. And exactly like you said, once there's a system, it's no longer a decision.
Yeah. And an example of that in action in my case, I'd never thought of it as you're describing it, but an example of that is that I swim, you know, and have done for, I don't know, 30, 40 years as a regular routine, 3-4 times a week. My target is 3. I sometimes don't make it, but I've done it wherever I've lived in the world. You know, second thing I do after I found out where the nearest bar is to find out where I can swim. And I'd even choose hotels on that basis, you know. And but I don't swim because I wake up in the morning and think I'll go swimming. I swim because my bag's by the door and because I go swimming in the morning. And that's what you're talking about when you say systematize this thing, is it? It's reduce the decision-making, because the moment I think about it, 50, 60% of the time, I'll decide against it because I've got something more important to do.
Exactly. And that's what I always say. If you put a piece of cake and you put a salad in front of me, you ask me which one I prefer. Or if you ask me, you know, hey, then would you prefer some Netflix with your girlfriend or whatever? Would you rather work on this thing right now? Very often, I would probably pick the choice that isn't the best for me. But the fortunate part about me, my situation, is I'm not in those situations. And so that's why I don't make those choices. That's why I perform. So I have this concept I call 100 fights. That I think is very relevant to this. So I do a lot of Muay Thai and MMA and boxing and all these things. And one thing I realized was that I don't care how good of a fighter you are, if you are in the ring 100 times in one day, you will lose some of them. And even some of the fights that you're winning will be taxing mentally, emotionally, physically. And so even if you're the best in the world, you will have a hard time if you're fighting 100 times per day. But that's, in my estimation, what a lot of people will do. They will, you know, their alarm clock will ring in the morning and the first decision is already there. You know, should I snooze or should I not? Okay, you end up snoozing. Okay, 5 minutes later, should I snooze again or should I get up? And then you actually maybe get up, you know, should I put on my running shoes or should I not? Should I check my phone and scroll Instagram for 5 minutes or should I, you know? And before you know it, you've only been awake for an hour and you've already fought yourself 13 times. And even some of the fights that you've won, which you could argue that kind of drained your decision-making and your willpower and all of that. That's fine. It was still taxing. And I think if you're fighting yourself all day with every area of your life, no wonder everyone is stressed. No wonder everyone is fatigued and tired. And no wonder everyone is beating themselves up for not being 100% perfect and winning those 100 fights every day. So what I tried to do is I realized if I'm going to win 100 fights per day, the only way I see that happening is if the opponent never shows up. So if the running shoes, exactly like you just said, you put it beautifully, you wake up and you just, you know, before you even realize you're on your way to the swimming pool or to the gym or whatever, you're already halfway there, you know, because it's just something that happens. There's no decision. I think that's what we try to do with, you know, in people's careers, but especially also outside of the careers, we look to eliminate those fights and just win by default.
Yes, very, very wise words, very sound words. And I love that as a concept, 100 fights a day. If I've understood correctly, does that mean there might be some fights you choose not to even get involved in?
Yeah, so for example, if you are, let's say you've identified that you would like to improve your health, and for that, for you, that means you want to put on some more muscle mass. And we've identified that you can do that by lifting weights. So, okay, so we know now we need to lift weights. A lot of people will fight themselves 10 times per day around that, right? Should I work out now? Maybe not. And then an hour later, should I work out? Nah, I'll do it tomorrow. And it's just one big fight, or it's a series of other fights. Whereas the person that says, I will lift weights for 45 minutes on my way home from work on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. There's no decision. It's just after work on Monday, you just know, okay, I'm on my way. And obviously you got to build that habit, but very, very quickly, once the system is kind of designed, very quickly, it will just be a natural part of you. So there is no fight. It's literally just happening. And that's a lot less taxing, I believe, for...
Well, absolutely. I totally agree, and I think the kind of spin-off to that, if I can put it that way, is that the amount of the amount of emotional fatigue that you amass in not doing something you believed you should do is trails you around all day or perhaps longer. So you're scoring many ways if you're doing these things. And one more thing I would say about this, thinking about the swimming thing again, is that, you know, I have never wanted to go swimming, get out of a cool, warm bed and go swimming in the middle of winter, for example. And yet, honestly, there is not one time in maybe 40 years that I've regretted that decision. And I know that the moment I get into the pool, you know. And by the way, it's not always pleasant because we swim in the sea all through lockdown. We swam right the year round in the sea, and that was cold, and that was not pleasant getting in the water. But it becomes kind of you miss it. You miss it if you don't do it after a certain time. It just feels wrong, and the day doesn't get off to the right start in our case.
Exactly. I think Jordan Peterson has something in his book where he talks about happiness versus building a good life, or perhaps it's being comfortable versus good life. He says, if you give your son ice cream for dinner, he'll be happy. If you give him a good, healthy, home-cooked meal, he'll have a good life. And over time, we can assume if he has the healthy meal, he'll probably over time be happier as well. And that's the same thing you're saying with your swimming. If you had to always only do what you felt like, you would miss some of those, perhaps a lot of those great swims, and that would over time be detrimental. So
yeah, I mean, swimming is a good example, I think, or cold water swimming is a good example because, you know, my wife is even more hardy than me. I mean, she genuinely is. She just doesn't seem to be, she knows it's cold. But the point being, she will tell you 5 years ago, there is no way she would have done it. But she saw me doing it. And she thought, and she used the phrase mind over matter. She thought, well, he can do it. So if I'm stopping myself, I've just got to ignore what's stopping me and do it. And she has become an evangelist about this now, you know. And we talk to people calmly. We're not evangelistic. But, you know, if it crops up, even at the gym, say, where we're doing healthy stuff, and the other people we talk to, you see them screw their, oh, I couldn't do that. They're living through this imagined experience in their minds. And yet that is a crazy way to go about it because, of course, it feels scary if you do that. And as an aside, actually, I think coming back to simplicity and avoiding 100 fights, I think that's why we both enjoyed lockdown so much, because we did, because life was so simple. You know, and okay, we're fortunate. We haven't got kids at home anymore, and there are lots of other things. We weren't cramped up in a two-bedroom flat in a high-rise. You know, we live in a nice place and all that. So that said, the actual process of the simplifying of life, there were things we couldn't do. Fine, that was another decision we didn't have to make. You know, and so it went on.
Yeah, I think modern life is very often based on stress and overwhelm and feeling behind and always. I think a lot of that will be reduced or even eliminated once you know exactly what it is that you want, and then you build clear, simple systems around it, and you just know, okay, I'm gonna lay my head on my pillow now, and I know that in at least three of the primary areas of my life, or maybe four, or maybe five. In many of the things that matter to me in my life, I am further now than I was when I woke up this morning. And it didn't require a ton of decisions. It didn't require a ton of me finding myself. It just happened because I designed the systems that I knew would put me effectively and sustainably and automatically towards what it is that matters. And another thing I'll add to that is, I think, start small. I see a lot of people, we see this with New Year's resolutions. We see this with people wanting to lose weight. You know, they'll go on a diet that promises them, if you just eat nothing but this Kenyan herb for 2 days, you'll lose 40 pounds. And then they do that and they don't succeed. And then they'll beat themselves up and they'll lose faith, all these things. And it breaks my heart. And so what I encourage people to do is build these systems and start very, very, very small and then scale up. Because as I always say, the easiest thing in the world is to scale a habit or system that you've already kind of got dialed in. So if you're reading 5 pages of a good book every night, you can probably read 6 as well. And if you can do that, you can probably read 7. Same thing, if you go to the gym for 30 minutes, you can probably do 35. So once the system is in place and you know, okay, this is actively getting me closer to my ideal life on a daily basis, then you can kind of scale it in whatever rate that fits you. But just, you know, just get the systems going and have it be a part of you.
I call that incremental thinking. A lot of people, they will see an ambition or a goal and it's way beyond their reach and they see where they are. And what they're really seeing is the distance between the two. And, you know, I encourage them not to do that. Obviously, you break it down in goal setting and we know all about that. But we also have to train the mind to think incrementally, a scale of 1 to 10, whatever it happens to be. And a lot of people can't do that. And I did it once with a man who was an artist, and this was, I'm in therapy, and he could not get this idea of graduation, and the numbers didn't work for him. We used a colour spectrum, you know. So I said, so we're, I don't know anything about the colour spectrum, you know. I didn't. He had to explain it to me. I asked him about it. I said, what order do the colours go in? Okay, you're on magenta now. How do you get to green? And that really clicked with him. So, you know, we can make up our own ways, our own stepping stones, our own inspirations in breaking it down. But we first have to learn that between A and B, there is always maybe 1,000 steps, but there are always degrees and increments. And if we can't think like that, we won't find it so easy to do. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's perfect. I love that. And this, once again, will cause overwhelm, a lack of faith in the vehicle, a lack of faith in yourself and your abilities. It's just, I think, overwhelm and doubt. And
I'm speaking to Daniel Hauger about the life-changing system that he developed and which he now shares with others. We'll get on to optimizing versus maximizing. But first, I'm Barry Winwell, and you're listening to Get a Better Handle on Life. If you're finding this podcast interesting, please support me by sharing this with someone you know or by following me on any of the usual platforms. Thank you. So let's turn, I'd like to turn to values because that resonated with me when you said knowing your values. How does somebody find out their values?
So I've obviously tried to help that process a little bit. I like with the 7 pillars PDF you talked about, I will share some of the pillars that I have, some of the values that I have. And then for some, you know, for a lot of people, we will have some values that we share. I think most people are interested in having good health, for example. And then there are some values where we're very different. So, but having a good starting point of understanding, okay, I know I want health and I also want this, you know, this kind of relationship. So that's pretty good. But for me, it was a lot of questions when I first got started. So I always like to tell this one, you know, if I were to ask you right now what 4 + 4 equals, I'm hoping I'd get the answer 8. And why is that? Is that, you know, why didn't you give me the answer 9 or the answer 13? Well, because of the question that I asked. So I think if we start asking the right questions, and a lot of them, I think we'll find answers. And so what I started to do once I had to learn who I was and what kind of life I was building was ask myself a ton of questions, you know, what makes me jealous? You know, why am I jealous of that guy over there? What makes me feel healthy? I feel really strong today. I didn't yesterday. Why is that? You know, why am I interested in that kind of career but not that career? You know, why am I inspired by that person but not that person? You know, what makes me feel this? What makes me feel that? What would make me feel more energized? What would make me feel less overwhelmed? What would make... So I think questions are really, really good. You can have someone ask those questions.
I agree. Yeah, I nearly wrote a book on questions. They're so important. And I'd really like to pick up on that because there's so much in that. There's a podcast, there's an episode in that. But the question of questions, you know, why invokes one sort of set of responses? It looks for cause. It looks for an explanation. However, and I've said this to you, not to disagree with you, but I've said for years to my clients and coaches and so forth, if you ask what, why, where, how questions, you tend to get a more objective answer. So, you know, why am I jealous of that guy is one thing. But if I ask the question, what is it about that guy that engenders this feel of jealousy in me? We get a far more precise answer. And then we can start to break that down. Or what is it? Or when do I notice this feeling in me? That kind of thing. That enables us to turn, because I think why questions, and I hasten to add, I know you're using why kind of generically and it's not a specific question, but I just want to make this point in this conversation that what, where, how, who will take you further more quickly than why, because why can very quickly lead to paralysis by analysis. And if somebody is stuck, say in depression, they're doing that already. They don't need me to tell them to ask themselves why, because that's what it's all about. But if they ask, what do I need to do? When did I last feel okay? How did I manage that? You know, what is the moment in my day when I see a glimmer of light, when I forget about my depression? Those types of questions. So I think that's a very powerful way to look at
it. Yeah, that's a great point. Certainly something I'll take with me. Absolutely. I think that's, I love that.
Seems a fair trade, because I'm going to be taking about 53 things with me from what you've said. So if I can give you one, I'm very happy with that. I just want to put in here too, and I will put this in the notes to this episode. There is something called the VIA Character Inventory, or Character Strengths Inventory, I think it's called. It's experimentally proven. It's very safe. It's free. It's reliable in my view. I've used it. I recommend it to clients a lot. Just as a thinking tool, but you will get your top 27 strengths in order of priority from that by this quite extensive questionnaire. And that feeds back into research, of course, because it's an ongoing study. But I found it really useful to remind myself that one of my top strengths is creativity. So, you know, very simply put, it just points out why 15 of the jobs I've done in my life, and I've done about 104, were never going to work, because I was expected to be a yes man or a drone. I was never going to be allowed to express my creativity. So if I'd have had that knowledge 30, 40 years ago, I would have made different choices, as long as I could do what you suggest, which is live according to my values and be honest with myself and be authentic.
Yeah, I love that, because I see, you know, your example is perfect. You want to be creative, and there are definitely situations career-wise and otherwise that wouldn't allow for that, and that wouldn't be optimal. And for other people, perhaps it's, you know, they want a certain kind of flexibility and they have the opposite. And so I just think it's really good to know your...
Yeah. I was speaking to somebody recently who said he was coaching somebody. A motivational speaker called Terry Tucker in the US, an incredible man. But he was coaching somebody who wanted to do something which Terry saw. It'll be in another podcast episode, I'll repeat it here. Terry saw as being completely unfitting for this young man, because it didn't align with anything the young man had told him about himself. And it led to a breakdown in their relationship, because Terry said, "Well, I'm not going to help you into a career in sales, because I think you'll be wasting your time, and I won't be motivated to do it. You know, it'd be like pushing you towards a bad habit." And the guy didn't come back, and I thought that was a very ethical stance to take. Probably disappointing, but it'd be too easy as a coach to take money for something which actually you as a coach don't feel is right for this person. Go and find somebody else if this is, you know, this is what you want to do. So coming back to you, the all-important person in this, let's talk strategy for a moment. Somebody comes to see you. Have you got an example that you can explain how this process of applying the seven pillars might work for somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have one client who came and she was very happy with her career and many other areas, but there's just something missing. We realized, you know, we identified the pillars, and one of the ones that she felt weren't up to par was health. And I said, cool, we'll dive deeper into that. And some aspects of her health were great, you know, no pain, no illnesses, no anything like that. But there were other aspects that she weren't happy with. So she wanted to lose weight, was what it ended up being. So that's kind of interesting. She comes and she knows her life is not what she wants it to be. She knows she's not what she wants to be. And then it turns out all that was really lacking for her was just she just wanted to lose some weight. And then she was one of those cases where she'd been for 30 years attempting all the diets, all the different things, never succeeded with it. And she was just, you know, for everything she tried, she just got less confidence and less faith and all of that. So, but then we just identified some of the Bridgetech app activities. We built systems around it. And with her, we started very, very small because we just, you know, I told her, you know, we'll just try and do something positive. We'll try and experiment with building these systems in your day-to-day. Why don't you drink a glass of water when you wake up in the morning? That's all I need you to think about now. Okay, so don't worry about what you're eating after dinner for snacks. Don't worry about any of that. You drink a glass of water when you wake up. And even that, she asked me, what if I can't do that? I said, if you feel like that's too much, that's okay. We'll do one glass of water on Mondays. I don't care how small we have to start. We just got to get you started building these systems. And then just very, very quickly, actually, you know, the system was just there. We added another system, which could have been maybe just a glass of water for lunch. Then we added another system and another system. And eventually she just, I think I worked with her for 4 months or so, and she lost 17 kilos. And she actually just had, she called me recently. I think it was a year and a half ago since I last worked with her. She called me about a couple of weeks ago. Some health person, health expert consultant, had come to her company and everyone had kind of gotten tested, everyone that was interested. And she had just got, you know, perfect, you know, in just about every way. Her health was very, very much better than her age and all these things. And she called me to say that was certainly not going to be the case if it wasn't for these systems. And one thing she likes a lot about it is that it's, I hate the word easy, but she feels it's kind of effortless to just scale these systems because it's just a part of her. She doesn't have to fight. She doesn't have to worry about anything. There's no overwhelm, no procrastination, no anything like that. It just happens. And she just knows every day I am further towards my my health goals. And now since she experienced these results, she's kind of been implementing it into other key areas of her life, such as her social life. She wanted to get out more and now she is. And so that's the beautiful thing about this thing that we do, is it's kind of a template that you can kind of plug and play in whichever area that you are.
Yeah, because she can now, she's learned, as you call them, systems. Is it fair to say these are habits that you develop, that one develops?
Yes.
In shorthand, yes. Without going further into it now. But she's developed these systems in one area of her life. But that's exportable, isn't it? That's transferable to other areas. So she's learnt so much from that. And by the way, if you're not familiar with kilos, if you're listening to this, that equates to about 40 pounds, a quick mental bit of arithmetic there on my part. Forgive me if I've got it wrong, but I think that's pretty roughly it.
Yeah, I think so too.
And so, you know, that's a really good example on many levels of how this idea worked. And you use the term scalable, and that really resonates with me because it is very often about scale. You know, if you're going to scale a mountain, as all the gurus say, and all, you know, it starts with one step. But it's where you set, where you look is what holds you up. If you do it wrong, and if you're looking for the top of the mountain, then by all means, I say to people, keep this in your sights, but hold it lightly, because you might be three steps in, four steps in, and you find something really fascinating, and you go down a different path. And maybe at the end of the day, the top of the mountain isn't where you need to be. But, you know, as long as those decisions you're making are wise ones, are sensible ones, in line with your values, as you've described it, then you'll be moving in a positive direction all of the time. So, and this conversation has moved in a tremendously positive direction, Daniel. I mean, is there anything... Now, there's something I heard on one of your other podcasts, and I have to say I was a bit miffed by this, because I have a question that I think is a really stupid question that I use quite often in some of my radio interviews when I'm kind of stuck, but also I've found it works really well for me. And I've tried to find ways to not make it sound like I'm being stupid or it's a cop-out. And the question you quoted having learnt from some guru somewhere at some time in one of your podcasts, one of the podcasts you did. And my uniqueness with my question was blown out of the water in an instant. So that's why I'm a bit miffed by it. But I'm going to put this question to you now, which is there a question that nobody's ever asked you, that you wish they'd asked you? You know, you've done a lot of interviews, and I've interviewed a lot of authors, for example, and I found this a really useful question. What's the question when you finish the interview you wish they'd ask?
Oof, that is a very, very, very good question. And I know in that story, my person that said that to us had a great, great question, so I really wanted to have that as well. I think it's the optimization versus maximization, because that's something I am thinking about a lot lately, and I just want to talk about it on every podcast, but it never really comes up because I'm kind of forgetting about it and I'm not being asked it. But I used to be very much an optimizer. I wanted, you know, this idea that if you have 6 hours to chop down a tree, you should spend the first hours sharpening it. I still absolutely believe in optimization. Obviously, I'm doing all these systems and clarity work and momentum, and I believe in productivity. I believe in getting your sleep. I believe in taking care of your health and all these things. I believe in leverage. I believe in optimization. But I used to be interested in sharpening my axe so that I could have the sharpest axe possible. Whereas now I'm more interested in sharpening my axe so that I can chop down the most trees possible. You know, so that I can actually do the most amount of work. Because I see a lot of people out there, entrepreneurs and otherwise, that are getting really caught up in all these productivity hacks and all of that, which is great. But then they're reading about productivity hacks for 10 hours per day, and they're not actually moving forward in their life. So now I'm much bigger on actually doing the thing, whether that's weightlifting or it's going on podcasts or it's helping clients, actually doing that. And so I think if someone... I think Alex Hormozi, I don't know if you know who that is, but he said, it's not always about getting the most bang for the buck. Sometimes it's about getting the most bucks. And so I'm still sharpening my axe, but the purpose of it has shifted from having the sharpest axe I possibly can to actually doing the most amount of value for my clients and my customers and myself, my family, my friends, actually doing the thing. So that's kind of a shift. And I think a lot of people would benefit from making that shift.
Right. I think there's a podcast episode in that because, for a number of reasons. And it just dawns on me, too, that I forgot to ask you earlier because you mentioned time for friends and we kind of went past it. But in this journey you have made, particularly the earlier part of it, you had to change your social structure. You had to change who you hung around with. What support did you get once you'd made that decision? I mean, you were leaving one peer group. Did you get support from your family, friends? Who supported you in that transition?
Yes, so my mother and my little brother, who is 2.5 years younger than me, are just the most perfect mother and little brother you could possibly wish for. They've always been supportive in everything positive I've ever wanted to do, and they always wanted to help me fix my life back then. And when I decided that I wanted to do some entrepreneurship, when I decided that I wanted to personal growth, they were the first to buy me the books for my birthday, my Christmas list, and all of that. So I would say us three And obviously, I love my father as well, but he passed away when I was 11 years old. That's what I...
Well, Daniel Hauger, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been truly inspirational. Goodness, these are words that get overused, aren't they? But I have learned and picked up so much from you, and I shall continue to process this. And it's not often that I say that. I have very interesting guests on my podcast, but I'm stunned, quite honestly, by how you've developed this wise head on 24-year-old shoulders. So unless I sound too gushing, well, I apologise for that, but I'm genuinely impressed. And I hope we can pick up again sometime and do another episode, because there's a lot more to talk about.
I would love that. I would love that. And it's no wonder your episodes end up going further than you thought they would, because your questions are really, really great.
All the best. Have a great day, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Incredible experience. So.
Bye-bye. Well, thanks again to my guest, Daniel Hauger. Find out more about him at passionforachievement.com. I'll put the link in the episode notes below. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed the episode and you'd like to help support this podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review, or better still, do all three. I'm Barry Wimbolt. This has been Get a Better Handle on Life. And to catch all the latest, you can follow me on LinkedIn, also on my blog at barrywimbolt.com. For now, that's all from me. Thanks again. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you.